for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast with over 50 years of playing PlayStation, like 15 years in that game's mini combined. I thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can. Come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can. Tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. And if you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If this was on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturists. So, Max, I've decided this week, I'm going to join your side of life.
You going back to night shifts?
No, thankfully. I'm going with the Max approach. I'm going to try fill this beard out.
Oh,
yeah,
gross.
I know, and like thankfully, you know, like your beard immediately goes to that red, gingery, strawberry blonde. Mine has little patches of ginge, and it's not come through just yet, but it will likely be here soon, which is exciting. But yeah, I don't know. Well, like it's one of those things where every time I've attempted to grow a beard, like as everyone knows, like I've had a beard for a couple of years now. But I always keep it, you know, reasonably trimmed. Thanks to Manscaped, by the way. Old sponsor of the show. I'm sure our promo code still works, by the way. FTP. So, yeah, I've decided, I'm like, you know what, let's see how far I can go again. This is probably like the umpteenth time I've tried to do this. And it will likely go the exact same way as every other time, which is I'll get really shitty at it, and then I'll shave it off. I'll have to trim the mo, though. It's probably the thing that grows faster. It just annoys me. But yeah, I'm thinking about it. Because one of those things, right? Like, just personally, I haven't really shared this news yet. But so since starting my new job, I've been very conscious about like what I eat and my movement. And I've actually lost like a good stack of weight, which is really sweet. Which in turn has allowed my face to be a little bit more accommodating to a beard. Mostly because I can't grow a full fucking beard. It's patchy as shit. So the less face I can have, the more desirable beard I can have. Max, you're very lucky that even, I'm sure you're aware, bit of a round face, but your beard nicely, like, fills all of it in.
Correct.
So, yeah, it works well for you, not so much for me. But, yeah, like, I'm down over 5 kilos, about 7 kilos now in total. Like it's one of those things I've been doing in the background, doing quietly, you know, after we've done it a couple of times in the past, like very publicly. I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm talking about it now just because it's, you know, I'm happy with it. I'm once again heading in the right direction. But it's interesting though, Max. having not done it in the public eye this time, it's changed it for me. It actually doesn't feel real. Like, even though I stand on the scales and it says a number that is less than it was, like, you know, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, it doesn't feel real. Does that make sense?
I guess.
Yeah, because I'm not actively doing anything to lose weight. I'm not, like, going to the gym. I'm not, like, you know, doing the 2 shakes a day nonsense. None of that. Just some small minor changes, and it's kind of falling off naturally. So it doesn't feel real. So it's difficult for me, I'm finding. Also, apparently the streamer mode's not kicked in on Discord, so now we're just going to get bleeps and bloops. Yeah. That's fun. But other than that, Max, how's your week been?
pretty chill. I'm doing a lot of, I've had a lot of healthcare appointments and stuff this week.
Is that something you'd want to talk about today, or keep that in your pocket?
Yeah, no, I did my pre-op appointment for my biopsy for celiac disease, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
I got yelled at by the nurse because I went gluten-free 7 months ago now, and apparently
7 months,
supposed...
really?
Yeah, I know, just before Christmas.
Wow.
So, six-ish, six and a half.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and then the nurse, like, full-on yelled at me. She's like, you know, you're not supposed to do that until after you have had your biopsy because it could skew the results. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, also eating gluten as a celiac, like, is deadly, and I didn't want to poison myself for 6 months just in case. So she's like, well, a week out, you'll have to start glutening yourself up again. I'm like, okay. So that night, I went home and smashed a pizza.
And then died, I assume.
No, not at all.
Or did you recover perfectly fine, like you don't have celiac disease?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. No stomach pain, no nothing.
Yeah, because you haven't had the biopsy yet, you haven't had the results. As far as your body doesn't know that it's celiac, so it'll stop doing it. It won't respond accordingly. Like, when you told me that they're like, oh, don't change your diet, I'm like, are you fucking dumb? Like, why would they tell you that? Like, oh, you had, like, your levels are really insane. So much so that we think you have pretty severe celiac disease. Can you continue to eat every piece of bread in sight between now and when we see you next?
So that you have when I got my blood test done, there was three markers. So the first one was like,
maybe. Second one was sure. Third one was
The first one was like, yeah, you're on the higher end. The second one was like, 80 was high, and I think I scored like 100 and something. And then the last one was 80 again, is very high, like very prominent. And I had 2,500. Like, yep. That's not a little bit over. That's not borderline. That's like...
Yeah, I'm pretty confident you could... Like, did you have to get retested?
Well, I just got a full blood work I've done on Saturday. I had to pee in a cup. Had to give like vial... they took like 5 vials of blood. Because I've got a healthcare appointment this week to just suss out the rest of what ails me. They've retested my celiac numbers, so it'll be interesting to see.
That's what I'm so curious. When do you get the results?
Well, Wednesday, hopefully. Because
it'd be pretty funny, like, if it's still like 1,000 and you've actively not eaten gluten.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had... I had the appointment on Wednesday, so I ate pizza Wednesday night and then got my blood test on Saturday. So we'll fucking see what happens, won't we?
Sorry, once again, I just muted the microphone for the recording, not for you. So you just got blasted in here with me blowing my nose. I do apologize.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like, do we even need to do a biopsy? The results still fucked.
Well, that's what the nurse said to me. She's like, well, the doctor's going to make you get one, but she's like, you know, that they're pretty fucked numbers. I wouldn't even bother. And then she's like, oh, what tier of urgency are you? And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, have you been rectally bleeding? I'm like, no. She's like, okay, you're tier two.
Like, not, I'm like, okay. Not because of gluten.
So that was like, yeah. So I'm like, oh, you know, what's the current waiting period to get this done? She's like, oh, it's about 2 to 5 months. I'm like, okay.
All right. Keep eating them glutens for the next 2 to 5 months, Max.
So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Damn. You're having fun with them doctors.
Oh yeah. You know,
yeah. Are you open to discussing the other thing that went down today?
Yeah, sure, why not? So I think it was September of last year, mm-hmm. Got some paperwork to do testing for adult ADHD, and today I finally actually went to a psychologist and went and got that test done.
But my favorite part is, this is your mate. Now, for those playing at home, as Max mentioned, late last year he was provided the assessment forms, and in true ADHD fucking fashion, he didn't do it until he was forced into a room to do it.
It only took like 45 minutes.
I know! Because I did it, and I also put it off for an ungodly amount of time. And the fact that it's... So, it's one of those weird tests where it's like, yay, you you passed or you failed or... Like, it's a test you don't really know how, like, whether it's good or not, how, you, like, your, where you went. It's up to you, I suppose.
Yeah, so I'm awaiting those results. I should have them by the time I go to my doctor's on Wednesday so I can hand the referral letter over.
Nice.
I will now need to go and see a psychiatrist.
Yes, because especially if you want medication, because only psychiatrists can provide you meds. In the chat, I did miss this earlier. Mute did ask, what was the pizza, what was the pizza that you consumed?
I got a Chipotle chicken with jalapenos.
Oh. You had me until the jalapenos. I like me some Chipotle chicken.
Have a little spice in your life.
No, because then I get rectal bleeding, but not because of of celiac. That's a pizza crime, says Reverend Buck. But yeah, in terms of like yourself, like now that you've finally done it, you know, so I've been living with ADHD since, what, January of 2020? Well, my entire fucking life. But also since Bit of Paper.
The knowledge of it.
Yeah, with the knowledge of it since January 2022. It's pretty powerful information to have. Now, granted, you haven't got your official yet, but how do you feel after doing it? Like, hearing the questions, answering them, like, where are you sitting?
I mean, we discussed this slightly earlier, and I'm not surprised. Mm. Like, I'm really not. Like,
so, in terms of results, so the results look like they're swaying one way.
Yeah.
For those that have been watching you the entire time you've been on here, I'm sure they're aware too.
I'm sitting here playing with a USB stick at the moment.
Yeah. hang on. I pounded some Ritalin so I don't have to fidget, which this could be you soon. Imagine the show when you and I are both medicated. What the fuck would that be?
Boring as fuck.
Yeah, probably. So, hi, welcome to the show. I'm Ryan and I'm Max. This is For the Players. And we're like measured and collected and offering like, you know, maybe good insight into things.
Sounds fucking terrible.
Sounds...
We'll have to take it in turns to not medicate on a weekly basis on a Monday afternoon.
Look, I am excited. Like, when we do it, actually, hang on, wait, what episode number are we? Like,
we're really close to 400.
Yeah, should 400 be the first medicated bad boy?
Well, we'll see how quickly I can get the turnaround on seeing a psych.
Reverend Puck in the chat jumps in and goes, "Time to get some of those Fume sponsorships that both are a replacement for vaping and a fidget toy." Now, I have never, like, once again, back to the ADHD, right? When it comes to, like, vaping and stuff, I understand that our brains, which I can say this now because it's pretty confident, like, our brains are, like, built for addictive shit. Like, nicotine, anything like that, our brains love that shit. It's also a stimulant, which is really great. So, like, I refuse to ever buy my own vape. I got mates that vape, and I always give it a try because A, it tastes incredible. Like, hey, do you want it? You want some smoke that tastes like a Chubba Chub? I'm like, fuck yes, I do. It's like, this one tastes like passion. I'm like, give me some. I will never buy one, but I'll always give it a burl for funsies. And I know that
don't we need prescriptions now for vapes in Australia?
Oh yeah, I'm sure you do. But tell that to the TSG, you know, the supermarket. They don't give a shit. So Froom I've always heard about. That's kind of like, it's like vapor. It's like literal water vapor. So you're breathing in literally nothing. Which is interesting. I think it's most.
Also, is it like those bizarro water bottles where you put like the scent in your
yeah,
in the thing?
Like, yeah, yeah.
You're like, I can smell the, I can taste the smell of the orange.
Yeah, so you have it like, ooh, it tastes like, you know, it tastes like, you know, black currant, but without all the fun parts.
Hey, if I wanted to drink black currant, I'd just drink a fucking
Ribena. Yeah, just fucking eat black currants or drink, you know. But anyway. true. And once again, true. Out of fashion, we just went tangented. Let me just write this down. Max is weak. All right. So let's get into the section we call What Games We've Been Playing. Max, there's a game that we have both played this week that you have an interesting story for, and as do I.
Yeah, you go first. I want to hear your story is way funnier than what mine is. So.
Okay, so those that know, for the longest time, after your recommendation, you went, hey, you need to go check out this game called Blueprints. I was like, okay, sure, why not? Free on PS Plus, I'll check it out. Very quickly, we fell in love with the game. I fell in love with the game. It was incredible. I really enjoyed it. It's something that myself and my partner and my friend Craig, that we all played together. Right? Or like Craig would have his own game, but whenever he'd come around, we'd all play it as this collective thing. Now, you know, we weren't here last week because you were sick. I'd lost my voice and I was pretty sick also. Pardon me. But my partner, Phoebe, she had also been sick. Now, because of my day job, I don't really have a team. It's myself. Now, we just hired some more people, so the team's building, which is great. Take some of that pressure off me. But as of right, you know, as of last week, I still had, like I said, still sick. All I did was just chuck a bunch of shit in my face and go to work. I had no choice.
Gone are the times of COVID where we'd have the slightest sniffle of the nose. It's like, you're not coming into work for like a week and a half.
Exactly. But because I still had sessions to deliver with schools and whatnot, I couldn't cancel them all because I couldn't, there's no way I could reschedule all, you know, school if I took a couple of days off. It would be impossible. I'm like, cool, no worries. So I keep going to work. Phoebe's a couple of days off. No shade to that, of course. Sorry, I just muted myself to clear my throat. No shade to that at all. Like, fuck, I would have had time off if I could have. So I get a message from her. I'm presenting at some school. I get a message. She's like, hey, do you mind if I play Blueprints? I'm like, yeah, sure, no worries. Go ahead. Cool, cool, cool. And then I get a message a little bit later. Like, hey, what would you say or how would you feel if I rolled credits on Blueprints? Now, mind you, that wasn't a theoretical question. Because she had already done it.
Well, you know the rules. It's better to ask for forgiveness than for permission.
Yeah, I would have preferred if she asked permission. So, like, what I'm about to say is genuine and also taking the piss, right? It's a little bit of both. But the sentiment is accurate. I have, like I said, my immediate thought is, like, it's awesome that she's loved the game enough to roll credits on it. That's never happened. Literally ever. So for that alone, truly amazing. Very proud of her for that. That's great. But now, if I'm being completely honest, and I also know she's watching in the other room, it has kind of taken any momentum out of the game for me. She said, why didn't you go watch the clip on YouTube? I'm like, then what's the fucking point of playing it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's making sense.
Yeah, then Josh in the chat, and we haven't spoken since. That would make it very difficult, seeing as we live together. But no, it is one of those things. I know she didn't do it out of malice or any ill intent. She just playing the game and just happened to hit the credits. Mind you, knowing full well that you walk through the door that says 46 on it, that's the end of the game, because the entire setup, the first thing you hear from the game is, you need to find room 46. So if you find room 46, they have reason to believe it's kind of the point of the game.
There's so much more after it.
Don't matter. I'm not going to see it now. And I mean that. Like, I know that sounds really petty of me, and it's like, it's no slight towards Phoebe. It's really not. Because she goes, I want you to watch the clip on YouTube. I'm like, then why? What's the fucking point? I played it to experience it. Like, the feeling that you get, and which she's now experienced as rolling credits, is awesome. The sense of completion that you feel, like everything you've put into it becomes, you know, it's concluded. It's done. And I don't have that. It's done. So, like, there's more after the credits. Just go keep playing more. I'm like, yeah, and skip the point, the thing that we build towards. So I'm a bit bummed. Like, I'm a bit bummed about that. But in that, once again, the dichotomy of that is at the other side. I'm just genuinely stoked that she's found a game that she enjoyed so much that she wanted to get credits on. And I'm aware that it's my petty bullshit as to why it's now impacted me. But, like, it was a really good game when I played it. You have a Blueprint story, though? What's yours?
So, as you've alluded to a few times, there are a few rooms that you need to get in connected sequence to power certain rooms to unlock certain things.
Mm.
I did that. I was having the God run, in my opinion.
Which is, once again, that's also what Phoebe had, which got her to the end. She just had the perfect run.
I had all the doors open in the antechamber room, ready to go.
Yep.
I'm on my way to room 46. I've counted down my steps perfectly. I've got like 3 to spare. I'm on my way back. The power shuts off at my house for 2 seconds. Game's gone.
Okay, that's way worse than what I experienced.
Haven't touched it again since.
See?
I was literally there, ready to see the credit, and the power's just like...
As was I! Just, the fact that she got it in one run, I'm in exactly the same as you.
And I was like, ah, fuck this game. It's a sign. So I want me to finish.
Yep. So will it make my game of the year chat? Yeah, probably not now. Would have.
Probably not now.
Would have been really high. But, and look, another game that was within our game of the year chats, and, you know, it's not as, you know, I'm sitting here going, meh, but at the same time, I'm like, hey, Phoebe, do you want to play Death Stranding together?
Oh, imagine if she rolls credits on that without you.
Ah, I've done it before, it's fine. 3 years ago. If anything, I'd be more impressed. The fact that she could play this all the way through the credits without me, holy shit. But, like, so with Death Stranding 2 right around the corner, I wanted to play it again. Mostly to get myself re-comfortable with the game, with the gameplay, and also try to remember all the batshit insanity that is Death Stranding 2. Now, you've done the same as me, though. You've also booted it back up. Are you playing it? Where are you playing it? PC or PlayStation?
PlayStation.
Oh, cool. Because I know...
I'm playing the director's cut on PlayStation.
Hang on. Got a clarifying statement. Phoebe, in my message, goes, mind you, now that you've refused to play on, you've now kind of ruined it for me too, and I'll always feel bad going back to play it without you. Yeah, it's sadly what happens.
You're just like, so I got a big one.
No, not that at all. No, it's like, no, it's understandable. It's both bum, yeah. It's bum for both of us now. Now, I'm not saying that that's her, like, anyone's fault, because I'm as equally to blame, so I'm like, nah. But it's like, for me, once again, the way my brain works, you'll understand, is like, I work in momentum. And once that momentum ceases, it's done. There are games that I will I fucking love this. And I'll play it endlessly for like months. And then I'll go, yeah. An example, Schedule 1. A game I've been playing with Craig. Really enjoying it. Haven't touched it in 2 weeks. So the idea of playing it again, I go, yeah.
I get banned on Steam.
Yeah, probably. I know. Once again, like, I work in momentum. So once that momentum stops, okay, yeah. Like, even same as, like, you know, a couple other games we'll talk about today. But, like, what I'm hoping is, like, Death Stranding, right? Like, that momentum isn't done. You know, it's even the same as we're trying to organize on our Thursday nights. We're trying to play a Star Wars tabletop role-playing game with myself, Phoebe, Craig, and my mate Paris. What?
Yeah. I mean, I hate fucking Star Wars, but like,
which is probably why I didn't ask you. Yeah, and like we locked that down about 3 weeks ago. Now, in the last 2 weeks, completely on my fault, by the way, because I had a work function last Thursday, and then the Thursday before that, I had wrestling. Right, so that momentum has already been broken because of me, and I know, like, I'm already losing the oomph to do it. Because we haven't done it yet. And I know it's my fault. So we better play it this week. Otherwise, it's probably going to be done. Not out of spite, not out of anger. Just I'm like, it's taking too long to get started. So, yeah, like with Death Stranding, like, we've played it, what, once? Maybe twice, I think. Now, mind you, it was I wanted to play it because I thought Phoebe would really enjoy the story. You know, something I'm sure, I believe I've talked about this before. If not, I'll share it now. One of the most powerful things about Death Stranding is its allegory for, like, being a parent and carrying a child and going on a journey with a child and building that connection and that relationship. And then once you start to experience characters like Mama and, you know, we start to learn more about BB and their connection to Mads Mikkelsen's character, whose name I can't remember right now. Or even Norman Reedus's connection to BB and how that expands. So Phoebe and I, we have had a difficult run in the last couple of years around trying to have a child. We have very sadly had a couple of miscarriages, and it's impacted us both deeply, both of us in very different ways. So knowing Death Stranding's coming up and knowing that that is such, like, that concept, like that connection to an infant or a baby in this case, because, you know, they're still in the little thing, I'm very aware that is going to be a difficult experience. But part of me wants to play it with her so that she can experience that in a safe way, because I believe Death Stranding will now be different to me based on the experiences that we've had in the last couple of years. And I personally want to experience this game again with this new understanding, with this new outlook, even though I know it's going to be painful. Because I know you, like, I know you know the scenes I'm talking about.
And dude, what they even I, to. Even I, even I got fucking hit by them.
Yeah. That's it. For me, that's I want to experience it because the second one's coming out. This was my game of the year that year. I believe it is one of the most weirdest but beautifully and powerful stories I've experienced in games. I'd love to experience that with her, and additionally with what we've faced.
It's a fucking bold strategy.
It is a bold strategy, but it's one of those things that I think will give us another thing to bring us closer. Like, going through the experiences that we have has brought us closer. But I think there are things that the way it is delivered and expressed within the game, I think, truly, truly beautiful. And as I said, for myself, I'd like to experience it to see whether it helps aid with that healing. And I'm unsure how it's going to go for Phoebe, but I'd like to have her on that journey with me. In the same way that she has been very lucky to experience my connection to God of War, and then experiencing that through James as well, and the impact of that story on me and who I am, and in a lot of ways, Death Stranding has done that too, not to the same extent, but I do wonder whether this time it will hit differently. But for yourself, Max, what was your is it just because it's around the corner or?
Yeah, it's essentially because it's around the corner. I want to kind of refresh myself going in. I've played up to the point where I've connected my first major city now with the Cupid, so I'm probably going to be done with it, and I might just hit one of those YouTube story things and just watch all the cutscenes as if I'm watching a fucking movie.
Yeah, because it kind of is just a movie.
Yeah.
Where did we get up to? So we've done the president thing, done the first two places. So only a couple hours in, like 3 hours in.
Leave. Got the Kyle printer up and running yet?
Oh, yeah, Kyle printer's up and running.
Done the wind farm.
Maybe?
The wind farm's literally the next one after the Kyle printer.
I'm halfway there, I think. I'm just kind of wandering through.
You need a power to wind farm. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Because, yeah, I've got it. There's the two split. I've got to go one way up the hill and then one other way is down on the plane. Yeah, so that's where we're at now. Yeah. Early days. Super, super early days.
Yeah, and then you get the main mission to go back to the starting point and then go all the way across to the other side. And that's when I'm like, fuck it.
Yeah. So... Once again, after just discussing like the impact of Death Stranding as a story, now granted you're not into those deeper parts yet. How is it playing it again? Is it still feeling the same? Is it still hitting the same?
The music seriously, it just brings back all the memories straight away. Like when that music hit, when like you're in the opening scene,
the low roar song. Yeah,
I'm back.
It hit like it. Yeah, it actually hit differently this time.
And then obviously I chuckled when you finally get to your private room and all the monster cans are gone.
Yeah, and now it's Bridge Energy or something. Yeah, I didn't explain to Phoebe that they were Monster Energy drinks in the original version. It was bad enough like when I made Sam Porter Bridges take a shit, and then like this big ad for Norman Reedus's ride, which Phoebe has watched and enjoyed. But one thing I have enjoyed though is just remembering how fucking weird it is. But then also that it works and makes sense within the internal logic of the world. Like the concept of there being these ghost things is really dumb and bizarre, but that they're like, oh no, here is how it makes sense. And like you can reverse engineer it, and in the logic of the world, it's perfect. What a game. What a fucking game. Now, granted, you know, Blueprints, you and I coincidentally playing along the same time. Death Stranding, appears you and I have been playing at the same time. There was a game that came out last week. Now, we were very kindly provided two codes, one for yourself, one for me. But as of yet, I've not touched it, nor probably will I, because it's not a Max, it's not a Ryan game. It's most definitely a Max game. Max, what have you been playing this week? I know what it is.
I have been playing Elden Ring Nightreign. Boy, what an interesting title this is. So this is their new title, standalone multiplayer PvE. I want to say it's kind of built like a battle royale, but you don't play against players. You essentially, the aim is you farm up as much as you can, you get as much gear as you can, and at the end of each night cycle, when the fires come in, I think it's called night rain in this, funnily enough, when the rains come in, you go to the point on the map that's the safe zone, and you fight a big bad boss. If you win, you get to go to the second day, and eventually the idea is to get to day 3 and beat the Night Lord. When you first turn on the game, you have access to only one Night Lord that you can queue into, and then once you beat that, it unlocks like seven or eight other ones. There are 8 different characters to players, or character archetypes to players.
You can't customize your character build it the same way you can in normal Elden Ring, right?
No. So there's 8 predetermined characters that have the same, that will have all different starting equipment, that each have a character ability, a passive ability, and an ultimate skill. When you first turn the game on, there's only 6 characters. You have to unlock 2 of them. But yeah, it's essentially a roguelike Souls game.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you finish a run, whether it is a fail or a completion, you will get some loot that you can take back with you in the form of relics and ritual gems. And then you can use those gems to start your next run with a bit of a buff, whether it be elemental damage, damage reduction. You'll gain more skill. You'll get your skill back faster. So each character plays very differently. So they're all stereotypically built, kind of. So you've got, you know, your roguelike character that uses daggers. You've got your parry character that uses katanas and rapiers. You've got a big heavy guy, and they all. So when you're playing in a 3-player, because you have the choice of solo, expedition, or trios. You want to make sure that your team is balanced. There's no point picking 3 of the same guy because unless all 3 players are very like astute at the game.
Can you, so when it comes to matchmaking, can you select?
So at the start,
as in when you go, do you all just come in as 3 people and then you pick your character?
Yeah. So at the start of the expedition, you literally queue up, it'll matchmake for you. And then there's a splash screen at the start that gives you like 10 seconds to pick a character, and it shows you what your teammates are picking as well.
Oh, perfect. So
you all pick characters at the same time. Most people just pick whatever they're going to pick. There's a few that I gravitate more towards. I tend to enjoy playing the smaller, more agile, dexterity-based characters. but I've had the most wins with the strength-based tank character. So I've beaten three of the nine.
Out of how many?
So I think there's like eight or nine at the moment. So essentially your game plan is you kind of just spawn in on the map at a random location, and then the first thing you do is you pull your map up and you're just filled with points of interest and whatnot. So when you queue into a game, it tells you what the boss's weakness is going to be. So you pull the map up and you go, okay, I need a poison-based weapon. And there'll be a little icon on one of the forts or the any of the points of interest. Mm. One of them might be poison. You're like, okay, I have to hit that point before I get to day three, because that's going to guarantee me a poison-based weapon. So it'll give me a huge edge over beating the boss.
Yep.
And then you kind of just want to go through, clear out as much stuff as you can, because in this game, every piece of gear has a passive bonus, and as long as you've got that in your backpack, you gain that passive bonus regardless of whether or not you're actively using that item. Mm. So you want to try and collect as many things that will buff your character as much as possible whilst also gaining souls and still leveling up. Leveling up works a little bit differently in this, where it's just you'll get a set amount of certain stats. So if you're playing the tank character, you'll get strength, vitality, and, you know, more health, all that stuff. If you're playing the dex-based characters, you'll get more stamina, more... So they're kind of pre-built in a way that they kind of shoehorn you into playing the certain role, because that's how you're going to level up regardless of what you do. Mm-hmm. So there's no point picking the stealthy character and being like, I'm going to use a two-handed sword, because the stats that are required to make that stronger, you're not going to be able to level up when you level up.
From a wider Elden Ring experience, because my understanding is that making a build is a big part of the game. So with that choice being taken away from you, how does that alter your enjoyment or your experience of this title?
Well, you're still technically making yourself a build, but it's all up to RNG. So if you're playing the archer, for instance, and you get no bow drops, you just have to
suck it.
Play it as it lies. Mm. Yeah. So all the characters work because they've all got their own passives and character skills. There's some that work better in a group scenario versus solo play. So the characters that I mainly gravitate towards are the Duchess, which is one of the unlockable characters. Her passive skill is perfect dodge, so she can dodge more often and further. So your window for attacking is a little bit larger, so you're more safe. Mm-hmm. But you can only use daggers, essentially.
Low damage, but lots of dodgy.
Yeah, but her character ability is, it marks a point in time and then replays a certain section. I think it's about 2 seconds. So any damage that the boss takes or any enemy takes within that 2 second window, I can rewind it and they will take that damage again. So if your teammate uses their ultimate skill and takes a massive chunk, I can hit my stopwatch, rewind it, and I'll take that chunk again on top of it. So it's a very good character to play.
Does that also then re-roll any damage that your teammate experience? So say there was like a big boom, big AOE,
just for the boss. Oh, it's just for the enemies.
Beautiful.
And her ultimate skill is she cloaks herself and anyone in her vicinity, mm-hmm, so they can't be attacked.
I'd like her a lot.
If your teammate needs to heal, or if both your teammates are dead and you need to revive them, cloak yourself and then go and attack their bodies to revive them, because that's how you revive dead people in this game. You just attack their bodies. So the Duchess is my main go-to, but I've really enjoyed the character as Iron Eye, which is the archer.
Okay.
So the archer's passive skill is you just get better loot from things because you have keen observation, so your loot is just better. His character skill is a dodge, but it allows you to dodge through enemies and it will mark them.
Ooh.
And then if you hit that mark, it deals bonus damage. And his ultimate is just a big fuck-off bow that just shoots a massive fucking throw Dar of air and just fucking knocks everything, kills everything. Brilliant. But the benefit of because of the way the revive system game in this works, you don't have to run over to the character and hold down square to revive them. You just have to hit them with an attack. So if you're using a bow, you can just fucking shoot them from across the battlefield and get them up real quick. So because it's a team-based game, because you're playing in threes, you get one person to pull the aggro, and then you just fucking pepper the dead guy with arrows until he's back to...
That's kind of
beautiful. So although the archer does fairly low damage, he's really good in a team situation, because you're really good at picking people up, because you can shoot whilst running. So even if the boss is aggroed on you, you can kind of just fucking strafe and just shoot your arrows, which is handy. And then obviously the passive skill of just you get better items.
Yeah, that was always been my problem with multi-man games like this. The idea that damage is like essential at all costs, but then it's nice to hear that even those support roles are still incredible. Like the ability to do that, to shoot across the battle, like the area, still revive someone. Like, that's integral. Like, it kind of makes me think that every run you need to have an archer or a magic caster or something.
I don't think I've had a run without an archer. And on the games that we don't have an archer, someone's holding a bow in their secondary to just shoot people all the way down.
Smart. Like, okay.
Really useful to have. So the big problem I have currently with this game is there's...
What's in maintenance right now, so you can't play it?
Well, it's just maintenance right now, but there's no communication. There's no voice chat in game. So on a team-based game, you cannot communicate with your teammates. You can ping the map and say, I want to go here, but your teammates don't have to listen. They can just fuck off and do whatever they want,
yeah,
which is annoying. And then I'm really struggling to find games. There's no cross-play support, which is bizarre.
Do you think that's like a region issue? Because like I imagine this game is incredibly popular.
Yeah, well, it's one of the highest played games on Steam at the moment.
So where's the struggle?
Well, I can't play with Steam players because it's not cross-platform.
Oh yeah, good point.
There's no cross-platform multiplayer.
Mm.
So I've had queue times ranging from like instant to like 15 minutes, which is rough. So hopefully more people are picking this up, because obviously when you first start the game, you can only queue into that first boss. So either everyone sucks and no one's beaten the first boss yet,
which is interesting, which certainly, like, for a game like Elden Ring, which is so heavily skills based, like any Soulsborne really, to have things that gated does make it harder. It does mean that when you pair with someone in those later nights yeah, or whatever, night bosses, like, you will be paired up people that could actually help you, which is assumably very, very helpful. But up until that point, it's going to be a hurdle. Because when we received the codes, like, because we got two, I thanked, our rep for providing two. I said, look, it's not really my game, though. And there's essentially spotted with, yeah, Max will carry it, it's fine. Which is true. Like, so, you could do that, but would that work in a game like this?
Yeah, well, I can just queue up for the first boss again. So there is an incentive to go and do it. So the way the story is told in this game is through remembrances. So each character has their own little mini story, and they're replayed through remembrances, and each remembrance will give you a set of objectives. So you'll have a little story session where you'll go talk to a bunch of people and they'll be like, hey, this is what I want you to do. And then it'll say, next time you're out on an expedition, go do this. So the one I'm doing at the moment is I have to beat a particular boss, a particular Night Lord. One of them happens to be the very first one, mm-hmm, and one of them happens to be one of the other ones. So I could queue into that basic one again. But then I also run the risk of getting people that can't beat that boss.
Mm.
So it's like, do I want to go for the higher up one, knowing that these people haven't beaten the first Night Lord, or do I want to just queue into the Night Lord, knowing I'm going to get a party faster, but I run the risk of getting two people that are struggling to beat this boss to begin with.
And it's interesting, because here in the chat, Josh LaRosa jumps in and goes, FromSoft are not known for their great multiplayer suites. That is true. And with a game like Elden Ring, like Bloodborne, like Dark Souls, it's all about get good. And in a circumstance where, like, hey, you may have to actually fucking help someone, and, you know, general Soulsborne players tend to be, like, selfish assholes, very like, look at me, better than you. So the fact that may have to, like, carry some people in order to achieve the results that you want, it's kind of cool.
Well,
throws the Elden Ring or the Soulsborne experience on its head, where it's, you know, normally it's just, I'm the best, fuck everyone else, go me. Where this is like, go me, I'm going to bring you with me, though.
Yeah, so I would imagine with, like, a properly coordinated
team... Or you get
team,
a lot of really mean direct messages, I imagine, it's probably going to
happen. Well, I got a direct message the other night, and it was one of those genuine, like, yeah, thanks for that, we definitely wouldn't have gotten through without that, because I got, like, a clutch victory at the end. So I was playing one of the other unlockable characters, the Revenant, and her ultimate skill is... You are invincible for like 3 seconds, and it also revives any downed teammates.
Oh,
so everyone was
some
down.
Of these
I was
buffs
about to die.
Are pretty
and
rad.
I'm just like, fucking douche. Yeah, she. Everything else about her is fucking piss weak.
Oh, okay.
she's a summoner. So her character ability is you get to pick one of three spirits to come and fight with you. Mm-hmm. They're fucking garbage. Sometimes they'll take aggro off the boss, and then they'll be killed in two hits. And her passive skill is literally called necromancy, and she can bring things back she kills for like 10 seconds. Like, she's a fully gimmick character. She's a support only. She's only good with like incantations and magic. And her only saving grace is that ultimate ability that makes everyone fucking invincible for a short period of time.
In the chat, Josh LaRosa jumps in and goes, if you're not LV1, I'm not sure, I assume that's level 1.
Yeah.
No hit parry only, are you actually playing Elden Ring? Well, if you're playing Elden Ring in any sense, you're actually playing Elden Ring. How you play something or the level of self-difficulty, the difficulty which you put on yourself is arbitrary to you. So, you know, actually playing, I'm not having a go at you, Josh, but the idea of this is how you actually play the game, get fucked to the general populace. That's my other biggest problems with the Soulsborne community. I don't like being told I'm being... playing something wrong. I'm playing exactly how I fucking want to.
And then each of the Night Lords themselves have a different mechanic. So the one of them I tried earlier, essentially halfway through the first day, you'll get cursed, which means you lose half of your maximum HP.
Oof.
You just can't recover it. But then there's a spot on the map where it's like, hey, you can go and bargain with this motherfucker. And then you're like, okay, cool. You get there. And he's like, oh, I'll uncurse you for 15,000 souls, which is like a couple of levels in the early. And I'm like, no, I'm not fucking paying 15,000 souls. And he's like, okay, then. Fight me. I'm like, so you want me to fight you on day one instead of day...
Sorry, and then your noise fucking... cut in for a second there.
So essentially he's like, you can fight me and I'll take off the curse. I'm like, but I'm not supposed to fight you till day three. You are the nightly. He's like, fuck now, let's go. I'll fucking do it. So I did it and I got my shit kicked in because I was like level 3 instead of like level 10. I think the level cap's 15 for this. I've never managed to get above level 11. I just haven't had that.
I laugh, but this is the same guy that couldn't get past the third biome in a return.
I mean, I haven't had that optimal run because all the XP is shared. When a teammate kills someone, you get full souls for it.
Oh, nice.
But if you're not paying, like if you don't have an optimal run path of where you want to go, things you want to hit, like, you know, do I want to focus on going to the churches so I have more healing flasks? Do I want to focus over here to get more weapons or drops or whatever it is? And then you've got a tiered-based equipment system, so it goes from a white to blue to purple to gold. And then those are level locked. So you can't use a blue weapon until you're level 3. You can't use a purple weapon until you're level 7. You can't use a gold weapon until you hit 10. Not that I've ever found a fucking gold weapon, but they exist. And then because the map itself is the same, but the points of interest will change locations each run, essentially. And then they have world events. So one of the ones that I've experienced was essentially there's this big fucking volcanic eruption and this massive fissure in the middle of the map. And from what I can tell from reading the in-game lore, apparently if I get to the bottom and kill the boss down there, I'm guaranteed a legendary weapon. Ooh. But I can't for the life of me work out how to fucking get down there falling in.
So, with this, because you mentioned some rogue-like things, is this a circumstance, like, obviously from night one to night two to night three, you can keep what you collect, but it's when you die, you lose it all, and you start from scratch again?
So when you die in this game, if it is during the day, you respawn, you lose all the souls you have on you, and you lose a level.
Oh, okay.
And then you can run back to your souls.
But you still get all your weapons, etc. It just went, okay.
Yeah. You can go collect everything again.
Okay, well that's like not if you, brutally RNG.
If you die at night, it's game over. And it'll kick you back to the lobby.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So the other thing is, during the day, if you're fighting field bosses during the day and you die, when you respawn, they don't regain their health.
That's good.
So it's easier, but yeah.
But it's also like longer and harder.
If you get dickhead teammates, it does make the game more difficult than it needs to be.
As a future dickhead player. Right.
Like if you had that ability to voice comm and you knew the people, I think you would be able to route out a pretty good path and you'd probably do really, really well. But because there's a lack of that, you know, I don't know when my ally is going to use his ultimate skill, so I need to be paying attention at all times to make sure if I'm playing like the Duchess character that can rewind and redo the damage, I have to be ready. I'm like, oh, should I use it now? Because I did a fairly good chunk, and then they use their ultimate. I'm like, well, I can't use it now. Wasted the potential to do so much more damage. Whereas if I was in voice chat with someone, they're like, hey, I'm going to do this now. I'm like, cool, I'll save my skill. I won't use it. So I look forward to playing it with friends and having the voice chat going and diving into it real deep. But at the moment, although I am still enjoying my time with it, the frustration is in the teammates.
Yeah.
And currently, there's a patch going live right now that's going to make solo play easier. That's going to allow you to buy self-revive items. At the moment, solo play is horrendously fucking unbalanced. And unless you're really, really good, it's really, really hard.
So yeah, so you're loving it? You're giving it good solid love?
Oh yeah, I'm still really enjoying it though.
Nice. I do love it that the fact that there are certain games that are very max games and there are certain games that are very Ryan games. An example is, so a little recently, I received a lovely email, and it was like, hey, here's, you know, as you know, I love my simulator games. And this one was called Cash Cleaner Simulator, Max. Now, having just come off of a laundry store simulator...
I was going to say, if this isn't you just tipping money into a fucking washing machine, I...
Yeah, it's kind of exactly that, eh?
Awesome.
So, the premise of this game. So, big thank you to the team for providing the review code. We got the code like before launch. However, with Doom and just life being life, we had a couple big games to cover. I wasn't able to jump into it until this past weekend. So, they did give me a follow-up email being like, hey, have you checked it out? We'd love to see your content. And I had to respond being like, hey, man, I'm so sorry. I haven't done it yet. I'm really, really sorry. Life's been busy. Really bad. Sorry. But thankfully, I've been able to spend some time with it. And look, the only way I'm going to consider this is good things to come that comes to those that wait. Because Jesus Christ, is this game incredibly fun. So, although your premise was correct, there's a bit more to it than that.
Is this a PlayStation game? Because I know you've been playing a lot of sim games on PC lately.
It is on PC. I've been playing it on PC, knowing because majority of the sim games that I enjoy don't cross to console, mostly because the menus or that little extra intricacies. Thank you.
Gotcha.
Are a bit tougher on a controller. Now, granted, you're not like using you use quite a substantial amount of the keyboard, but not all about it, etc. So the idea is that you are essentially in this little warehouse. You have a phone, and there is someone being like, hey, you're in here because of me. You got shit to do. You can't get out until you're done. I'm like, okay, And the premise is you open your phone, there's an app, you click the app, and it'll give you a task. So I wouldn't call them missions, they are more tasks. And that task is, hey, we need you to put $10,000 in any bill denomination, all wrapped in stacks, into a sports bag, and I need you to ship it out of this place. So what they will do is, from the little trap in the sky, a couple bags will fall down, they're all full of money, and you just go, so the first thing you want to do is sort it out. Now, this is the part that I am genuinely having the most fun with. Like, I've spent more time just, like, cleaning, bundling, put, you know, organizing all these monies than actually shipping shit. Because it'll come in, and I'll be like, oh, 10,000, that's easy. These two bundles I prepared earlier, bing, bing, put it in the bag, pew, throw it out the door. And the task is done in, like, 3 seconds. But then I have to go through all the bills that I just got, and they're all, like, different denominations. Some of them bundled. The bundles are inconsistent. You have to cut the bundles and then get a machine. So I just put a big clump in the counting machine. So it spits out all the ones that aren't that. Cool. I collect them up, put them into the second one that I have. So if I have the denomination of 100 on my first one, collects all the 100, spits everything else out, put 50 on the next one, pick up the stack, throw it in the new one. While it's still spitting out whatever's left, it's already working on the next one. Start bundling up. I've got pallets, because you can have like boxes. So I've got pallets, and I have a stack of, you know, 4 pallets on to the left of the building where that's all my money that is unbundled, right? Like, it's not in even stacks of 100 or whatever, which is what I like to do, even though I have the ability to make the stacks kind of whatever I want. So I have 4 stacks over there, and there's your 10s, your 20s, your 50s, your 100s, brilliant. And then next to it, I have them all bundled up in their 50s, 10s, 20s, 100s. And then on top of that, because some of the as it is cash cleaner simulator, right, some of the money that you get is tampered. Like, it's their forgeries. So you then have to verify what's real and what isn't. Because some of the tasks will specify, we want legit bills or non-ink covered bills. So an example is, there's a thing that comes from this, like, you know, one of the tasks early on, it drops you a bunch of those, like, bank, like, big zip lock, big bags. Pop it open, ink pack goes off, blows out everything that's inside it. So then, as of right now, I've unlocked the thing that allows me to essentially scrub the notes clean. But up until then, I had like a washing machine and one of those, like, a big, you know, those machines that you can go in and catch all the money. That's the dryer. So, like, when I get bills that are just simply dirty, washing machine in the dryer in a pile, sort them out, boom, next task. Now, granted, I'm only like a reasonably small handful of hours into the game, and it's already like escalating in intensity, which I really like, especially within these simulator games where, you know, you learn the basics really quick. Pardon me, there's ways for you to accrue money, to accrue resources, and then the tasks will just start ramping. So you don't, like, the idea is that you can golden path and just hard brute force each of the main tasks. But unless you do these side tasks and accrue some of that, like, side wealth, because let's just say the task is like, we need $15,000 in a box. Cool. They'll probably drop like $20,000, $25,000 out of the sky. So not all of it will be needed for that task. So instead, I focus on having it all sorted and ready to go to allow for an order that I presume is coming that'll be a big honker one. And the more you play so far, the more area in this warehouse unlocks. I thought it was initially quite a small space, but there is like a big built wooden wall that eventually burns down by circumstance, and you have access to a furnace. So if there's any of the bags that are damaged, or you can probably throw all the, you know, fraud bills in there if you want, or any of the ink covered, like anything that you're like, I don't need that, burn it. Because there's no bin or any other way to dispose of things other than burning it. Now, I won't explain what happens after that, but I have opened up the area again. Now, just for, you know, those that want to experience the title, I won't let you know what happens next. But essentially, as I mentioned, it just ramps up that difficulty. Sorry, as I clear my throat. By difficulty, I mean in what the task is asking of you. The motions are still the same. The systems are still the same. It just increases the intensity of it. Now, the interesting part, which I'm not quite sure whether I enjoy or not yet, is that as I've opened up more areas, it readjusts the layout. So suddenly I have to rethink, because I like to have things laid out in a relative like chain. I can go this to this to this to this, boom, and then it's out the door. But every time I've opened up a new area, it's then altered things. So I have to rethink how I have my setup, and that's fun in of itself. So where I'm at right now, I'm in the process of realigning my setup. But outside of that, like, the game is great in terms of its visual aesthetic. I really quite like. It's got a lot of interesting street art designs, very graffiti-esque. Once again, going for that sort of what's what I'm looking for? Like a street illegal feel. When you do take on any of the main missions or the Golden Path tasks, there is like a text exchange between yourself and this individual that's asking the task. That's pretty fun. There's a lot of unlockables, like more tools, after that, you have the ability to decorate the space how you like. So if you have excess money, you can buy a couch, you can buy a bed, you can buy a table. You know, you can start making it feel like more of your space outside of just the space where I'm pummeling money through. But right now, it's just pretty much me pummeling money through it. It was definitely an experience that I hadn't anticipated, like how deeply I'd fall into it. Because, what's today? Today's Monday. Yesterday, at time of recording, was a Sunday. Didn't have anything on after, you know, a week of being sick, a bunch of weeks being busy. Phoebe very kindly said, do what you gotta do. So we both had a bit of bum around the house day. I just sat here at the computer. I was like, I'll go back to this cash cleaner thing, it'll be all right. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, 4.5 hours is gone. And it's dark outside. And I don't remember that happening. And thankfully, you know, once again, very kind to Phoebe to not interrupt me. She saw I was on a roll and I was enjoying it. And I really appreciate that. It was really quite nice. But yeah, like, am I going to play more of this game? Fuck yes. Fuck yes. Like, I think it might be that new little game that I jump in, do a couple tasks, do a couple things. You're like, oh, yep, cool. And then I can just duck back out. In the same way that when I re-dove into like PC building simulator probably about 6 months ago, that's what I did. When I was working from home, I'd go in, I'd do a couple missions or a couple tasks, I'd build this computer, whatever, and then I'd finish it off and go away. Now, granted, now that I don't work from home, I probably won't spend as much time with it as I would like to. Instead, I'd have to probably more create dedicated time to sit here at the computer and play it. But dear God, is it way better? Like, music is fun. Like, the from a graphic standpoint, as I mentioned, the stylistic choice earlier, like, I really like its design. It's clean. It's sharp. It has, like all simulators, there is a little bit of that, like, AA simulator jank. But compared to other games I love, like Gas Station Simulator, or even Laundry Store Simulator, as I mentioned earlier, this, it plays really well. It looks fantastic. I am genuinely enjoying all of this. And because it's all taking place in like a shell, like a cut area, like a enclosed space, it's allowed for a lot of the fidelity, a lot of the consideration, a lot of the development to happen within here. Because you know how we talk about like why games like a fighting game can look like a, like Injustice as an example, can look so immaculate because they're not having to render a giant open world or all these assets. Like, it's like two bodies that punch one another. So they can really tighten and lock down where they choose to spend that development time. And in here, I feel they've really locked it into the gameplay experience, which makes sense because as they simulate a game, they are gameplay-focused experiences. There's no major story. Even then, the story is just, here is your next task, and there is a reason why you have said task. But yes, is it a max game? Absolutely not. Betson game? Oh yes. No doubt. Unquestionable. Outside of that, I have spent a little bit more time with like Doom the Dark Ages, but that's more of a game that I'm sort of going in and just, you know, chipping little bits at here and there. But max, I know we've already gone for an hour and five. No complaints from me. Love chatting games. But you have dived back into a genre that is max as hell.
Yeah, I have been dabbling in the Battle Royale space again. So last week I picked up, it's called Off the Grid. It is currently in beta on PlayStation, PC, and Xbox. I am playing it on PC. I'm playing on PlayStation. What am I talking about? Playing on PlayStation. And the gimmick to this Battle Royale is you need cybernetic enhancements, so arms and legs.
Sweet.
So they are your equipment and your gear. So if you, so depending on what arm you equip to your left arm, you'll get a grenade or a knife or a grappling hook or whatever. The left and right arms are kind of interchangeable, just depending on which arm you find at the time. And the legs will give you movement-based skills. So one is like super speed, one's cloaking, one's super jumping, one allows you to shoot fucking mortars out of your kneecaps, which gives you a free UAV, which is great. It'll ping any enemies in the zone that you... So I don't even use them to ping enemies on the map. but the cool thing about this game is its verticality. So instead of being a round map, kind of like Warzone, it's a fucking long, skinny map.
In the chat, good friend Blake, also known as the Royal Rooster, did ask. He goes, "I did play this early days, so it's about the game you're discussing now. How are the load times and the frame rates?" Sorry, I know you cut you off like right in terms of the map.
No, that's right. Head into that. Yeah. Frame rate's been fine. I'm playing on what is perceived as performance mode, so I haven't had any dips, and I'm waiting maybe a minute for a game.
Cool. So there's already a bit of interest in it, which is good. But yeah, so yeah, there's a map image that was quite
apparently
long.
Apparently they're going full launch this month.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so the map is, instead of being like a round or a square, it's a long rectangle.
A big pathway, big hallway sort of setup?
It's wider than that. Okay. But essentially you've got like a villa estate, you've got big skyscrapers, you've got constructions. And
oh, okay. In my head, it was once again. You said verticality, of course.
Yeah, and the gimmick is instead of having a parachute like in Warzone, you have a jetpack. So you have rocket thrusters. So you the more you fly down, the more momentum you can get back up, and you can kind of dolphin swim through the air and until they overheat, and then they're like, "Hey, fall down." I don't know what it is, because I haven't played shooters in a very long time, but people who play this game suck.
Yeah. So this is the thing that made me chuckle, is throughout this week, we've been getting messages in our little group chat with you and just your leaderboard. And, you know, you and I talk a lot about our old man reflexes, especially now we're in our mid-30s. And now, granted, your first-person shooter reflexes are still better than mine, but you are, like, decimating people. You it was like 15-0, which I know for many is not a lot, but
well, when there's only 60 people in the lobby, I'm killing a quarter of the players by myself.
Yeah.
So I was playing it with one of my friends from Sydney, and we teamed up with another PlayStation player, and he was using voice chat. So we jumped out of our party chat and joined in, and We stuck together for like three games. We won all three of our games. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, "Hey, I've got a dip." We're like, "Cool, no worries." But if you just run at people, you could kill them. So they were essentially both playing with sniper, like my friend and this random guy, were both playing with sniper rifles. Mm-hmm. And me being the player I am, I've got my fucking sprinty legs on. I've got an SMG. I'm just running at people. I'll dive off a roof and just fucking land in their face and just spray them and then
piss. Yeah, the
out
fact that it's like, yeah, verticality and you can jump ass around, like, that is your playstyle. Just
so
unexpected, out of nowhere. There you are.
Essentially, the two snipers were just pinging people on the map for me, and I'm just fucking running at people. We're like, let's do this. Game's fun. It feels decent enough as a shooter. Gunplay was nice. There was enough of a variant guns to, you know, keep anyone happy. I did dive back into DMZ Call of Duty for a little while.
It's still playable?
It is still playable.
What do you mean Warzone?
No. DMZ is still playable. You can still play DMZ. The only people that play DMZ are the sweatiest fucks I've ever seen in my life. So I was queuing up. I was queuing up solo, and I'm like, I kind of want to play with people, but I accidentally queued solo. So using the in-game function, I'm trying to like ping saying, hey, I want to join a squad that's nearby me. And because there's proximity chat, they're like, we're not going to let you join us. We're going to fucking hunt you down, steal all your shit. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's fucking do this then. It's 1v3. And then I kill them all. And they're like, oh, come join our squad, Resist. I'm like, no, fuck you. You had your chance. You chose death.
So, this could have been avoided, mate. This could have been avoided.
But I find that I don't have fun in those games unless I'm playing with the boys.
Yeah, well, because I know a big part of DMZ. Like, we obviously play it a lot, but even then, how you and I played it was different.
I can't fucking stand playing it solo. So I tend to only jump on when I've got a friend to jump on with.
It's funny that, like, you're randomly sort of interested in returning to Battle Royales.
Well, there was rumors that DMZ is coming back.
That's what we hope. But, like, I was thinking, I was actually thinking about it over the last two weeks, because we obviously have not been here in a little while, but... I don't know why I ran like, you know what, I haven't played in what feels like 7 years, PUBG, because I played a lot of PUBG when it launched. I quite liked it. I really enjoyed the fuck
right off.
Well, no, yeah. But like,
in saying this, Off the Grid is also an extraction shooter as well as a battle royale. So to unlock anything, you have to pull items out with you.
So. I liked the intensity of PUBG, as in you spend so long not seeing anyone and then shit goes down.
It was too slow for me. That's why I liked DMZ. Because it was the fast-paced action of COD, but on a larger scale.
Yeah, DMZ was really a good middle ground. Plus, I love the NPCs that they put in.
I hated playing PUBG and being like, oh, 20 minutes of nothing and then getting fucking sniped in the back of the head. It's like, oh, cool. Rad.
Oh, yeah, that part's frustrating.
So, yeah.
But, like, the overall experience.
Reason why I like Escape from Tarkov. I'm like, it's just too... I don't want my gun fucking jamming on me. I don't want simulation in my fucking first-person shooter. I just want to shoot people in an unrealistically fast way.
Yeah, it's difficult, because, like, I don't... As a concept, I quite like extraction shooters. Mostly because I know I'm trash, and PvP ain't it. But, like, I can fuck with PvE.
Yeah.
But except for that one time where I got aggroed by every single NPC in DMZ.
That was so good.
You didn't. That was the worst. Yeah, but like as of yet, I'm yet to find one. Like we tried with, was it Rainbow Six Extraction? You, myself, and Padge tried to play that together. Didn't really work. DMZ is probably the closest that we've got. Like even the Division 2, which, you know, not predominantly a extraction shooter, but I mean, you know, all the Dark Zone stuff I never really messed with, because once again, you go in there and it's sweaty and I go no. Nah. But I'm glad you've returned to some Battle Royale, because I know it's a space that you have enjoyed in the past. Ideally, we would hope that in the next Call of Duty we get access to some new DMZ, because I'll play that on my PC, something fierce. Now, granted, I should go back and play more Call of Duty 6, seeing as I bought that Jay and Silent Bob DLC and haven't played it since. But that's on me. Once again, impulse, momentum.
Just very quickly, the last thing I've been playing this week is a game that's out on the Steam Next Fest. It's a demo at the moment. It is coming to console at a later date. It's called Dead as Disco. And it's What If Sifu Was a Rhythm Game?
Oh.
So they have they have essentially a bunch of pre-made tracks.
Yeah.
And you fight endless waves of enemies to the beat of the music. And they have an endless mode where you can import your own songs and set, as long as you know the BPM of the songs, you can punch, fight, kick, snap necks along to the beat of your favorite song. I sent you a fucking video to watch. I said, this is totally a you game. You clearly haven't watched it yet.
When did you send it to me?
About a week ago.
Yeah, it checks out, yeah. The Depends on when you sent it to me. If I was at work, I wouldn't be able to look at it.
It was probably in the middle of the fucking night, to be honest with you. Because it was blowing up on my TikTok. I'm like, game looks fucking rad. So I joined their Discord server because they were doing private invite betas. So I jumped in their Discord. I'm like, hey, in any chance? They're like, no, it's a giveaway only situation at the moment. And then the next day, they're like, hey, it's on Steam Fest. Everyone come. It's so much fun. It's like a 200 meg game. Actually,
it's so how does this work compared to, say, something like Metal Hellsinger?
Well, it's not a shooter.
Well, you know what I mean, but like that's a rhythm based.
Mm.
Like,
so it works essentially kind of the same. So, it feels like, and this is gonna really suck, it feels like Arkham Combat to the beat of the music. So you've got a dodge, you have an attack, and you have a parry, and that's it. And you're just doing combos with those as you're flowing through all the enemies on screen in an endless mode, whatever music you want to import.
Have you done the import in your own tunes version?
Yeah. Yep.
What did you do? What did you go to?
So I did what did I do? I did a couple of songs. I did a few Blink songs. I did a few slower songs. They don't work as well, in my opinion. Dragon Force was hilarious. I did Rap God by Eminem. Mm. And just all you have to do is you can either manually do like click to the beat and you can give it the beat.
Yeah, because I was going
to
say, like, granted, pop punk songs like Blink, their BPMs are relatively fine, but because they play double time, like, it seems faster.
Or you can just Google what the BPM of the song is and just punch that number directly into the game. And the game's like, sweet, gotcha.
But then if you've got like, my immediate thought was, because I've been understandably listening to a lot of Sleep Token lately, as I always do. But with, you know, with their new album, Even in Arcadia, coming out in the last 2 weeks, with a lot of their songs sort of having those big BPM switches throughout and like big tonal shifters, I wonder how the game would pick up that as it's kind of like nice and this kind of like, you know, this kind of triplet bass little hip hop inspired bit, and then it just goes into like dun dun dun, and I wonder how the game would tolerate going from like a Latin inspired beat to like hard ass gent, you know.
But it is mad fun.
You know what? There's only one way to find out. And me downloading this game and giving it a bell. Alright, well that is enough about what we've been playing. Only 1 hour and 17 minutes later, this is where we get into the section called Inform the Players, where we tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. Now, Max, the first bit of news is an interesting one, because I had always assumed that there was sequels planned, but not a trilogy.
So, PlayStation 4 game The Order 1891 originally planned as the first entry in a trilogy containing The Order 1891 and The Order 1890. A member of the Ready at Dawn development team has revealed in an interview with YouTuber Julien Chizé, as is coming from VGC, former creative director of the now closed studio Wirasuria, shared the team's original plans. After the first game, he's had a 10-page pitch for the sequels written that touched on bigger combat encounters and the inclusion of this follow-up apparently made it to the very early stages of development, but was ultimately cancelled. As for the third title, they explained they drafted plans for where the franchise would go, and even went as far as to write stories where the IP is based in the 20th century. Ready at Dawn never got the chance to turn The Order 1886 into a full series, as they agreed with the comments made by one of the developer's co-founders, Andrea Pacino, that the poor launch reviews killed any chances of a big follow-up being made. Earlier this year, Pacino spoke of the, quote, critical reception being the reason why they received the sequel. Quote, Sony is a very proud group, and rightfully so. And and the critical reception, if it had even been just in the 70s, we would have had the sequel, I'm convinced. Just a few points more and it would have been okay. The average score on Metacritic landed on 63, with a slightly higher user score of 6.8. It was claimed that the internal reviews were tracking, quote, way higher than the public critic response, and in reality, the studio needed another year to get the first game into proper shape. However, its February 2015 release date was considered non-negotiable, so Ready at Dawn had to cut a lot of content. After creating the Order 1886, the California developer began making VR games and was eventually acquired by Oculus Studios. In August 2024, though, the studio was shut down as a result of budget constraints. Sir Galahad, the main character of the Order 1886, was at least honored in the post-launch update to Astrobot, adding him as a new collectible special bot.
Yeah, so this is an interesting, as I mentioned. So the for those playing at home, they may not be aware, the Order 1886 was a relatively early release in the PS4 lifecycle. It was handled in a second party capacity, developed by Ready at Dawn, published by PlayStation. Therefore, the IP sits with PlayStation. Pardon me. The problem that this game had was that it was about 5-6 hours long. Which was, you know, not what was expected of it when it was charged at full price. It looked pretty amazing. However, as you mentioned, due to development constraints, it failed to really deliver anything largely groundbreaking outside of feeling like a fancy tech demo. Now, granted, I have not finished it, mostly just because I started it and then got distracted and sort of wandered off. But it has been on my list of titles to go and completely experience, right, to wrap it up. Because it does, from my experience with it, my relatively short experience with it, I really liked where it was setting up. This alternate, you know, 1880s where technology had, had escalated to a point where you can have, like, Tesla arc guns and stuff. You know, that's not Tesla as in Elon Musk Tesla, but Tesla as in Nikola Tesla.
It was very steampunk.
And I like supernatural shit like that, which is pretty fun. But about yourself, Max, what's your experience with the Order 1886?
I've played like an hour, and I, as with you, fell off it. It is very slow. And yeah, it didn't grab me early on. But it would be, knowing, I didn't know that it was only like 6 hours long, so maybe I should finish it.
Look, I will admit that the title really had potential. The world it built, the story, the things that they were setting up, also those initial considerations, really had some strong potential to go on to be something greater. And knowing that there was full plans to do so is great. My understanding is that the multiplayer was originally slated for the first release. However, as those constraints you mentioned, it did have to get pushed. In the chat, Josh LaRosa jumps in and says, "The game deserved better and at least a sequel. Talented team that made some of the best PSP games, intriguing world and lore, the exact game launching for $50 USD or $49.99, and presented in a way which didn't paint the game being this massive exclusive, and we would be playing part 3." Yeah. I do agree with the sentiment around PlayStation being very proud that they are, especially when it comes to their exclusives, and especially their over-the-shoulder third-person narrative adventure stories, which is exactly this. It makes sense why they would have been less reluctant, with especially in the score in the 60s. As the article said, had it been in the 70s, I think I would agree with them. I think it would have got there too, because there are folks out there. There is a vocal fan base to the Order 1886, including a friend of ours over at Well Played, Zach Jackson, notorious, well known Order fan. Even has got himself some Order ink on his body. Would have it been cool to have seen it into a sequel? Yeah. Sadly, not quite the case. Next, Fair? Games. Now, if you remember the original trailer for Fair Games, it had a contemporary Robin Hood vibe to it, as squads of fashionable rogues robbed from the rich. Apparently, as we now know, the game sees you dropped into a large urban environment in teams of 3 or 4, and tasks you with stealing from vaults while other groups of players attempt to do the same. But apparently this game doesn't feel too good to play and is, quote, super clunky, end quote, in its current guise, which reflects what Bloomberg wrote in its report on Raymond's departure 2 weeks ago. The feedback to the release has not been good. Sony has said that it remains committed to Haven Studios under new leadership, of course, but it's been 4 years since the team was founded and more than 2 years since it was acquired outright. Once again, it paints a very precarious picture of Sony's live service push, with the plug pulled on Concord in an unprecedented circumstance and many of its online projects cancelled behind closed doors. The company will understandably be feeling skittish about whatever it pushes out next. Now, since we last spoke on episode 2 weeks ago, we did discuss Jade Raymond exiting Haven Studios as she was the producer, one of the head founders of the company. It does seem quite bizarre. Now, granted, she's not a creative individual. She may be, but her role is not a creative role. Her is more production. It makes even less sense why she would have left. Following on from that, which we weren't able to report on, there was allegedly quite a bit of internal testing and internal playthroughs, which led to some feedback that was sent, and in turn could have led to Jade's exit, whether it be by choice or by not, which is yet to be explained. Max, with your eye looking into this, with this additional information about Fair Games, what are you thinking?
It looks rough, doesn't it? It's one of those things there. They're filling a space that's already been filled. Mm-hmm. You've got the likes of The Finals, I believe it's called. They're by... Can't think of the team. Let me just have a quick look. The Finals by Embark Studios. Mm-hmm. They're also doing the game. They're doing Ark Raiders, which is another extraction shooter. They're going against what other games? There was that literal game.
Yeah, was it Hoods and Outlaws or something? Was it?
Yeah, Hoods and Outlaws. And that didn't do very well. And that was it. I'm pretty sure that was a free PlayStation Plus game for a while. I enjoy most games when I can play with friends, if the game sucks. I will have a good time because I can make my own fun. Mm. But it is very damning that, you know, you look at the failure that was Concord, you look at how this is tracking, and you hear the online discourse of all we really wanted The Last of Us factions. Maybe they should have put more effort into that as opposed to the 14 other games that have been canceled.
See, that's the thing. I still don't believe it's as simple as that.
I mean, obviously it's not, because if it was, that's what they would do.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, why a company would want to make 14 live service games when people are only going to play 2 or 3?
I can exactly tell you
why. It's a fucking bizarre situation.
Well, it's interesting, right? So the way I look at this, and this is sort of the way I'm thinking about it, are these games for me? No. Are any of these live service games for me? No, not at all, right? The games that I like, the games that I enjoy, are those PlayStation exclusives. It is those narrative-driven experiences. That is what I love, single-player stuff. Does that mean PlayStation shouldn't dabble in those spaces? Absolutely not. Now, the question is, like, why build 16 of them? And, you know, because the reason I believe they have done this is they're fucking around and finding out, right? It's one of those things where I am much happier to have heard that PlayStation were willing to try, that they, like, threw their investment money in these things with the consideration of, if it works, excellent. If it doesn't, that sucks. Now, had these experiments been done 10 years ago, now obviously the games as a service experience is very different 10 years ago, but from a world economic standpoint, PlayStation had a lot more ability to fuck around and find out a decade ago. Like, they really could have just thrown a bunch of titles at the wall, see what happens, you know, where do they make it in development. The amount of games that are in active development that we don't hear about and that may never see the light of day because as it starts to build, they go, yeah, this isn't working how we originally envisioned. Like, okay, that happens. I would much rather Sony go, hey, we're going to try these things, than go, we're going to leave it in somebody else's hands. PlayStation have already done that. They did that with the handheld space. After the self-death of the Vita, PlayStation made the choice to step away from the handheld market, and it gave Nintendo complete reign to dominate it. And then further on from that, release the Switch 2 and become an incredibly popular handheld and console, which then led into the development and the very successful release of items like the Steam Deck, the Asus ROG Ally, etc., etc. Sony now will forever be behind the eight ball in that handheld space because of that decision. Now, granted, are they in a better position comparatively in the games as a service space in a more realistic sort of way? Yeah. They tried it. They went, well, what if we tried these? And it didn't work. Additionally, there was writing on the wall that would make you consider this may not be the right choice. And a lot of that came from their decision to get into bed with these studios early. I think that the purchase of Haven, of who did Concord? My brain says Massive Monster, but that's not it because that's the team that did Cult of the Lamb. No, it's Fire something. They were originally something Monster, then they were became Firewalk. So with Firewalk, they bought Firewalk Proof Sight Unseen for Concord. Now, this is something I heard in a podcast this week, Sacred Symbols, PlayStation Podcast, Colin Morani. I love it. It's a great show. Apparently, there is currently on eBay or Goodwill, it's Goodwill, on the Goodwill website, someone has found a plaque for Concord that has like a developer's name on it that was given out to the team at the launch of Concord. They found it in a Goodwill in Washington, and it is currently like worth thousands of dollars. So clearly the team at Firewalk, then supported by the team at PlayStation, they thought Concord was going to be something big and something relevant. Now, granted, they absolutely misread the tea leaves. The idea that, they should have just put the money into Last of Us Online, in a larger picture, if you don't have a further understanding of development or the inner workings of these studios, yeah, that would make complete sense. Oh, yeah, just do that. But the fact that they were working on it, and then Naughty Dog, as we got further supported by an interview that Neil Druckmann did recently with Colin Moriarty over at Sacred Symbols Plus, they talked about how protective Naughty Dog are as a studio for the IP that they work with. So the idea of them relinquishing control of that IP, especially now, as we know how largely important and impactful The Last of Us is for PlayStation and Sony at large, with the series, with the TV series, the game, the comics, etc. It is a massive monster IP. So they are very protective on who touches it and who handles it. And as we know, in order to support a game like that, they would have had to make it their sole focus as a studio. And I don't think they would have been in a position to outsource, incubate like a second studio within Naughty Dog to work solely on that because, they have large goals to what they do. I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, yeah, that's right. So the idea of that, really simple on paper, not that possible in execution. But I also, as I said, yes, I like the idea that PlayStation tried. I think there is a larger cultural issue at the moment about the idea of not being allowed to fail. It's always an issue, especially in Australia, people will call you out when you fuck up, but you have to try to fuck up or to succeed. You're not going to get it fucking right out of the gate. You have to try.
I guess the sour taste on people's mouth is it's costing thousands of people their livelihood
because
they're only trying on a whim.
Absolutely. And look, granted, it's not entirely a whim. Like, the games that they have selected, yes, may be the wrong examples, but they are pulled and referenced in theory from successful releases. Like, they are seeing that there is a presence in the extraction shooter space. You had your PUBG, which is huge. PUBG then fed into Fortnite, and Fortnite became the staple for Battle Royals. Now, anyone that's tried to replicate them isn't having a whole lot of success unless you're Call of Duty. Right? Or even Apex. But although Apex hasn't... I haven't heard a lot about Apex in the larger chatter for quite a while. Right? So in the extraction space, it's Tarkov and that's about it. A couple of people have tried to get in and they have all failed. There is no second tier extraction shooter. So they saw a gap in the market that they had the presumably the capital to work with. Did they make wrong investments? Absolutely. People make wrong investments all the time. Yes, it costs livelihood. Yes, it costs livelihood. That's also business. I say that's really I know that's very disheartening as someone that has also been made redundant twice based purely on poor management. I look at this going, yeah, it's poor management, but the risk, I don't think the risk was worth the negative impact. But taking the shot was worth it. But the market as it stands does not support that level of risk-taking, nor does the overly critical gamer TM. They're not willing to be accommodating to a potential misstep. Everything has to be fucking incredible or it's shit. Once again, it's the time, place, cultural, financial. It's a whole bunch of string of things. But sorry, you keep going, Max. I did ask you a question, then I kept talking.
You did?
Yeah, that's what, like, yeah. Are you in the same space as me? Because you said sour taste of the mouth was the, yeah, yeah.
It's just, it's one of those things. It's like, see, from my point of view, even as a business perspective, even if these all worked, you've got 14 competing games for your players' times. And it's just not all of them are going to, like, they seemed like they were set up to fail to begin.
I would agree with that. Like, I don't think all 14 would have been a success. Like, I reckon the ideal would have been 3.
Like, yeah, dip your toe in first. Don't jump in the fucking deep end.
Anyway. Oh, no, I agree with you in that sense. Like, the amount, way high. But... Yeah. If every one of those games cost like $100 million to make, which they probably did, that's fucked. But like if they were, once again, with there being that loss of that middle space, you know, with the demands from the from player base being like, we want the most immaculate, pretty fucking game in the world and we don't want to pay any more than $50 for it. Every decision is a massive financial risk.
That's when you just got to be like Randy and tell if you're a true fan, you'll come up with a way to get the $80.
You know what's a really good way to save money though? Just steal people's shit.
Yes. So, in other Bungie related news, after the stolen art from Marathon, they have come under more fire in the last week about. Internal operations of the studio. So game journalist Destin Legari has released a new video featuring former Bungie employees who supposedly reveal a, quote, toxic work culture, humiliation, HR working in their own best interest, and leadership mismanagement.
On a side note, by the way, Destin Legari, former employee of IGN, he hosted their Destiny-focused podcast. I think it was called Fire Team.
Yeah.
Right? So this is the guy that like has been jerking Destiny for years. And his name also is very similar, which is funny. So to him to come out with some expose shit, this could be interesting. Keep going.
As part of this, the sources that he spoke to claim leadership at the studio considered a standard subscription model for the multiplayer shooter Destiny 2 at one point, but the team, quote, vehemently shunned. The stories about the potential subscription service previously surfaced back in 2022. Destiny 2 originally shipped as a paid release and later transformed into a free-to-play offering with optional paid DLC expansions and microtransactions providing regular boosts of revenue. The same video shares more insight with the same sources claiming Bungie's management was supposedly obsessed with monetizing the second Destiny game in all sorts of ways. One example was about how the leadership team the Trials of Osiris PvP armor, quote, being too attractive with its glow effect, which led to worries about this impacting Eververse sales, which allows players to purchase cosmetics with real money. So, essentially, if the game's armor looked so good to begin with, people wouldn't want to buy the fancy armor pay real money for.
Yep.
Another former employee said staff receiving huge, quote, scoldings about monetization with the players and community reportedly an afterthought. Quote, everything happening to Bungie is because of greed, said one former Bungie employee.
Wow. This is interesting. None of this is new. Like, I love it. I'm glad there's confirmation, but there's been rumblings of the culture at Bungie for years and years and years. And highlighting many of these things. Also, spoilers, everyone. What was the exact quote? Where is it here? Where HR working in their own best interest. That is every workplace ever. Do not trust any HR department.
No, so in this, what they were doing is they would receive bonuses upon exiting the company if they had reportings against the company and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
So they would intentionally not document things or try and talk employees out of situations because they would get bigger bonuses upon exiting the company.
Yeah. I am a firm believer, do not trust your HR department. No one should trust the HR department. HR departments aren't there for you as the employee. They are there purely for the safety and the benefit of the company. They will fuck you the second they can. And it appears that Destiny was the same. So, yeah, for me, it's interesting in that we're seeing more behind the curtain of Destiny, further affirming, because like there's such an interesting string of things. Obviously, Bungie, owned by Microsoft, after they were making Halo, was meant to go to Mac. They went, fuck you, and they bought Bungie. So they brought it over and eventually got to a point where Bungie went, Microsoft went fucked up, said fuck off, sent them on their way. They were picked up by Activision, who after 10 years, essentially they went, hey Bungie, you know what, you can take Destiny, fuck off. And then now they were bought by PlayStation, and we're very quickly seeing how fucking busted Bungie are as a studio, as a collective. I do, and like they very clearly are good at talking themselves up and selling a good sell, because they were able to essentially trick at least two places. I can't speak to their first acquisition by Microsoft to, you know, be picked up. And the same. Now, granted, all these discussions around microtransactions, etc., I would press that many of those things were pressures by the hands of Activision, because, you know, we saw, whether it be Crash Team Racing, which when we played it in the review pre-launch in that review cycle, not a single microtransaction in the game. 2 weeks after it released, boom, hundreds of microtransactions in there. So all the praise that reviewers like us and much more reputable outlets were giving the game for its not having microtransactions, they then turn around and utterly shit the bed. So I imagine a lot of that pressure is from Activision to do so. The understanding that they de-incentivize unlockables for purchasables is sadly also common practice within any of these games and or experiences. Max, as a much more seasoned Destiny and Bungie supporter/player, what do you take from this? Is like, is this, are these things that you have also heard of and you know, had these rumblings out? And does it change your thoughts on the studio as a whole?
See, I take a very firm stance of if people want to spend money on their game.
Say it again. Sorry, you cut out for a moment.
I take the very firm stance of if people want to pay extra for their games and buy shit, they should be allowed to. The problem I have with monetization.
Sorry, like a fucking, again, you cut out again.
The problem I have with monetization is when it's constantly in your face, like a mobile game.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you finished a level. You want to skip the ad? Pay $3. You need a few more turns. Pay $5 for five extra turns. That's when I have a problem with it.
Mm.
If it's like, hey, buy some cool swag. Awesome. And like, I have this, especially in Destiny, I'm like, what is the point of buying them? It's a fucking first person game. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
So microtransactions in that game seem dumb to me because I can't actively enjoy them.
Mm.
They're for other people's enjoyment. They're for you to show off. Oh, look how cool I am. I bought the fucking golden dick swag.
I had the same thought when I was playing Doom the Dark Ages this week, because there's like skins you can get for the Doom Slayer. I'm like, oh, I never see a shield and fucking gun. Oh, this one's green. Okay.
And like, obviously there was rumblings about the crunch culture they had under Activision. They had X amount of DLC over the 8 years, all of that stuff. So it seems like they stayed with them too long and they were tainted.
But it's one of those weird lines where, were they open to being tainted? Or they were, you know, what was, once again, with the understanding with the understanding, as you mentioned, with this example, the HR team, if the HR team were incentivized to make decisions like that, what they allegedly have, then it's not untoward to consider that the ELT, or the executive leadership team, or the SLT, the senior leadership team, like within there, they would like, there was clearly a desire within their personal gains to like make the most amount of money. Granted, they're businessmen, it's what they do. But for them to go, if Activision went, look, we'll incentivize you if you do this, you do blah, 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 blah. And clearly they're already, as a collective culture, not an individual's, I can't speak for the individuals, but as a culture, that culture seems to already exist.
Yeah, well, I don't know when that culture. Yeah, I don't know when that culture began. It doesn't give
specifics. That's my thing, right? Yeah.
It doesn't give specifics on how far back. Because they do say they're old Destiny employees. So it's not like some old Halo 1 fucks like, yeah, no, they were this bad to begin with. So.
But saying that, though, quite a number of the individuals in that ELT are there since Halo days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can't name them because I don't care that much. But there are individuals that have been there since essentially day dot.
Yeah, for sure.
So they are the ones that are, they are the what's the word I'm looking for? They are the pole bearers, I guess, for culture. Like they're the ones that march it.
I thought you were going to say they are the poison infecting the rest of them.
Well, look, in a lot of ways they probably are, but you know, as they are the ones that have been there the longest, they are the more senior individuals. People will look to them as the North Star, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So if that North Star is acting this way or behaving this way, it then incentivizes or indirectly promotes that behavior within the larger company.
Yeah.
But this week, we saw the end to a game for the second time. So on the 30th of May, 2025, Multiverses came out. They said, that's all, folks, and has been delisted from digital stores and servers. It has put an end to this very rocky road for the platform fighter. Once the game has been taken down, it will only be playable offline if you wish to access it. And, of course, you'll have need to have logged in at least once during the last season. So as of right now, it is post that date. I have not logged in since its original season and its original cancellation, so I will no longer be able to access the title. Launching in an open beta in 2022, which is when I played it, it grew so popular that its status as an open beta was practically forgotten, with developer player-first games embracing the enthusiasm and updating it with cosmetic items, new characters, and so on. However, it couldn't keep up with the demand, and eventually the studio ended the open beta phase after about a year, and they pulled the game in order to overhaul it and prepare for a proper launch. When it did return in May of 2024, it never really recovered, failing to make an impact in the same way it did in the beginning. Despite all the improvements, pretty much across the board, it was a sad, sad end of run. Now, with multiverses, the intention was to make a almost Ready Player One-esque Super Mario Brothers Smash clone.
It was Warner Brothers Smash Bros.
Yeah, straight up. With interesting character choices like the Iron Giant, Arya Stark, Tom and Jerry. I'm pretty sure like the dudes
Michael from... Michael Jordan.
Was it, sorry?
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, Michael Jordan. Batman was in it. That guy from Steven Universe. I think it was the Steven Universe. Thankfully, they didn't go Space Jam New Legacy about it and put the guys from Clockwork Orange in there. That would have been really weird. Like, can I play the Rapists? but yeah, it was an interesting decision. Not a bad idea in premise. It was as we were first sort of dipping our toes as a larger entertainment collective within these big shared universe fucking things. This always seemed like a more Max game than a Ryan game. Did you fuck with it? And where you at with it? And I assume you're like, yeah.
I played it once and went, you're not Super Smash Bros. Fuck off. That was the same thing I did with PlayStation All-Stars.
Yeah. See, so, I reckon I would have had a lot more fun with All-Stars, but I'd never played it back in the day.
Like, you're not Super Smash Bros. You play differently. Piss off.
I played multiverses a lot with my son initially because it was a great way for us to like, because he was... What was it 3 years ago? He was five at the time. So for us to play like a more friendly fighter, great. Now we'll just play Tekken or Injustice or Street Fighter. We have way more fun. But for a truly multi-platform Smash Brothers clone, it is disappointing that it wasn't able to succeed. But the fact that we are describing it as a Smash clone tells you where it was, how it was going to go.
It's almost like if you try and copy a game, it's destined to fail.
Yeah, pretty much. Once again, the only example, the only differing to that is Fortnite. They essentially copied the Battle Royale of PUBG. I mean, incredibly successful. But not, yeah, 9 times out of 10, you focus on imitating, you will fail.
I do have a piece of news here that I don't have written down on the docs. So I'm going to go ahead and do this because it only dropped about 15 minutes ago. So over on Instagram, a new claim has suggested that Ryan will...
Sorry, you keep cutting out again.
This mic's being a pain in the ass. A new claim has suggested that Resident Evil 9 will likely appear at the Summer Games Fest this week. Oh, shit, is Summer Games Fest this fucking week?
Yeah, man. Like Thursday.
Dusk Golem, the insider known for providing Resident Evil information, has stated that they are 95% positive that RE9 will be revealed at Summer Games Fest. They can't provide 100% confirmation, as no source has directly informed them about Resident Evil 9 being part of SGF. However, there is, quote, a lot of buzz in the grapevine and a lot of rumblings behind the scenes. The insider elaborated that the type of activity that they have observed behind the scenes usually are signs of when a new Resident Evil being announced. Moreover, Capcom's social media accounts have also become more active recently, which probably means they are gearing up for an announcement. A couple of days ago, when the insider spoke about Resident Evil 9 starting as an open world title, they had mentioned a reveal and release window. According to Dusk Golem's previous tweet, Resident Evil 9 will, quote, almost undoubtedly be revealed this year and will be released in 2026. However, they were unsure whether the game would reveal in fiscal year 2025 or 2026. At the same time, they felt there would be no more delays as the game had already been delayed twice. So tune in to Summer Games Fest.
So I was going to say, like, it does feel that it's been a while since we've talked Resident Evil. I think the last would have been... Oh, granted, now we would have RE4 Remake, which was after 8, and then the VR ports. But it has been quite a number of years. I know there's been a lot of discussion, and this gentleman was a Dusk Golem. Like, I from memory, they are a pretty reliable source around things like this and Resident Evil. So there were rumblings that the next release would either be, say, Resident Evil 0 or Code Veronica or 9. There was a post that was put up recently by Capcom of a streets of like a sign and a like a wooden sign like what would have been in Village. And apparent, and like if you look at it, it does look like the 1 and the X, you know, the Roman numerals for 9, knowing that, you know, with Village, it was intentionally named Village because of the 5 and the 3 I, the 3 dashes, or the 1, the I and the 2 L's, to create the 8 in Roman numerals. So, I don't know what they would call Resident Evil 9, because there's not many words that can have X in them that would be relevant and or effective. However, as a fan of the Resident Evil series, predominantly since the remakes, particularly Resident Evil 2 Remake and 7, I am so keen for Resident Evil 9. Because it was, what, 21? What year did Village come out? No, it was 20. It was during COVID.
It's going to be Resident Evil Crucifix.
Ooh. Resident Evil Village.
I was looking at that for you. Village World
7th of May 2021. That was the initial release. That 7th of May 2021. So it's been 4 years since then. Sorry. And if we look at for Helix, shit. So in the chat, the Mullet Show puts in Resident Evil Helix. Now, that does align with overall Resident Evil branding. Shit, that could be... That's actually really, really good. That's really good.
Resident Evil Intermix. Resident Evil Appendix. Resident Evil Fixation.
Helix I'm pretty hot on, actually. Man, imagine if that's correct. And when it announced, we can be like, hey, we called it over here. Well, actually, we didn't call it. Craig called it.
We're going to get a phone call from Capcom later.
Well, we don't know anyone that works at Capcom anymore. Back in the day, it would have been our friend Kat. She'd be like, yo, shut the fuck up. But like, we don't know anyone that works here anymore. But yeah, that'd be interesting. Interesting indeed. All right. That saying that, though, Max, it is quite a long time until we see Resident Evil in release. So instead, let's get into the games that are coming up this week. And they start with this one. Today, the 2nd of June, at time of recording, Rise of Industry 2 is coming out on PS5. On the 4th of June, you get Bunny Cube to PS4 and PS5. The Night of the Rabbit on PS5. A lot of rabbit themes on the 4th of June, which is cool. On the 5th of June, Arcade Archives 2, Ridge Racer, PS5/PS4. Tour de France, 2025, PS5, and the 6th of June, Covenant of Solitude on the PS5. However, on Tuesday the 3rd of June, you will also have access to this month's Essential titles. If you have PS Plus Essential, these are games that are included as part of your subscription. We would highly encourage you to go and add them to your library, even if you don't want to play them, because they could come in handy later. These games include NBA 2K25 on PS5 and PS4. I think the new season's starting soon. It's probably not a bad idea. Alone in the Dark, PS5. This is the Alone in the Dark, essentially soft remake / reboot from THQ. Early last year. I think it was meant to come out in like October, and instead sort of came out a little bit later. Was it March? I enjoyed it quite a lot, but it didn't do very well. Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, PS5, PS4, and the last major DLC from Destiny 2 will be available under Destiny 2, The Final Shape, for both your PS5 and your PS4.
Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, for those playing at home, is basically Jet Set Radio.
Oh, okay.
If you remember that old game.
Yeah, yeah, way back. Because isn't Sega working on...
Yeah.
Nui?
Yeah. And I'll go back to them because Ryan missed them. The quick bits this week are EA cancelled Black Panther game as well as the studio behind it. But they still have
let me write this down because I did, in fact, miss the quick bits like a dickhead. So EA cancelled Black Panther game. Now, this is not to be confused with the Black Panther and Captain America game, the 1941, that has been made by Skydance. Whole different team.
Yeah, the studio behind it also got cancelled. But EA still have a 3-game deal with Marvel. And Expedition 33 has sold 3.3 million copies in 3 days. Love to see it.
In 3 days. Yeah, like that. Like good beat. Good marketing beat, right? Like, I imagine that they probably sold a bit more and they're like,
they probably did.
We want the numbers. we want the threes. But there you have it. A 2-hour bad boy this week. That's what happens when we take a week off and we have things to talk about.
We started as early as we did.
Yeah, did we even cover like any of the news from last week?
There wasn't much. The only thing that really happened last week was Bungie's fuckery with Marathon, but I couldn't find any writing stuff about...
it was all speculative,
like,
yeah.
Like Marathon being cancelled or like all their advertisement being pulled. I can't find anything.
Yeah. So to expand on that for those playing at home, there was some speculation around that Marathon's paid marketing had been either restricted and or eliminated in certain regions. My presumption is the belief that the game won't do all that well. It's probably just playing a big part of it. However, that does bring us to the end of the show. Big thank you to everyone, as always, for checking us out. I say this each and every week, but I say it because I mean it. Time is the most precious thing we have in this world, and for whatever reason you have chosen to spend it listening to us talk utter nonsense at you, so it does truly mean a lot. I was thinking about this recently as I caught up with someone on Thursday by pure coincidence, someone that we used to run around together in the games media space a number of years ago. And we were just chatting, and sort of they're off on another adventure now, doing different content stuff. And it was very interesting. They're like, "Oh, you're still doing that?" I'm like, "Yeah, man." Like, mostly because I don't know what else I would do with my time, and you know, I still enjoy doing this. I still enjoy doing the show, and as I've discussed earlier, like I'm very aware that our numbers are where they are, and they very rarely budge. They go up and down a little bit. Like views and listens always kind of scale, but you know, like our YouTube is pretty dead at this point. But I'm gonna keep doing the show anyway because it's fun.
Get ready for some fucking Mario Kart World Tour content.
Yeah, that's the other part as well.
That's all I'm gonna fucking talk about.
Max is itching. It's funny because like was it like a let's say about a year ago. I was like, hey, I want to, let's rebrand everything just for the players, right? Like Pop C was really cool. It was really helpful when we were doing so much, when we were sort of looking at other spaces. But we haven't done anything outside of PlayStation in a while. That's properly niche up. That's completely rebrand. And then last week, this fuck goes, yo, can I can do some Switch content?
Like Josh before me, he went full Games Pass. I'm going to go fucking full.
Hey buddy, what's in the chat? Mario Kart Forza, let's go,
man. Yeah. I'm so excited. Hadley hasn't fucking shut up about it all week since I went pre-ordered it.
I enjoyed the early days of the Switch one. I really did. I liked covering the games. I also liked playing the games, and I enjoyed playing them with my kid. But like at where it stands right now, at like $800 for the console, big expensive games, and in the absolute privileged space that we are in, less review codes. The amount of time that I would spend playing the Switch 2 would not equate the expenditure. So it's a sad thing. So it just means that I'll have to come bum some Mario Kart off you at some point.
Yeah.
Because I do love me some Mario Kart. sell the VR. Oh, actually, that's true. I may use the Switch 2 more than the VR. But because Max and I shared investment, I then have to give him some of the cash. And I did just spend $700 on fucking hosting bullshit for this stupid show. God damn. So if anyone wants to financially support the show, it'd be much appreciated. All right, Max, let's get out of here.
I'm going to go to work. All righty, everybody. This PlayStation and upcoming Switch podcast. this PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning, including our podcast Spotify and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to talk about future conversations with us, come and check out our socials: Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. If you are listening to us on podcast service, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, which I would highly encourage. I'd much appreciate it. I'm going to have to re-record those mic drops, Max. Yeah, look, because I'm lazy, and we used to record, like, locally, either side. Instead, Bill Earns. Sorry, I just complete side thought. So when Buddy mentioned the VR, I was like, oh, yeah, we got off. There was a key and key mailer for this pirate VR game. It was offered to us. I didn't claim it, so now we don't have it.
It's interesting because I'm getting drops on you as well.
Yeah, it might be a Discord thing. It's like my mix is being shit again, so could be that. Like it might be, you know how sometimes Discord will prioritize yours over somebody else's mic. I think that's what's happening because my mix is being crap. But either way, once again, please, if you are, just a dollar, please. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
Thanks, Cooper.
And that was for the players. I'll be a shameless e-begger. I don't give a shit.